Dark wings.
Dork words.
A Game of Thrones podcast.
Season 5, Episode 6.
Unbowed, unbent, unbroken.
Unfucking believable. Hey now, what's that sound? I'm your host, Chuck Davis, and with me this week are...
Greg McCallie.
Cat King.
Chris Voorhees.
Well, folks, how's that for a depressing dose of Westerosi bullshit?
I hate this fucking show.
We're being silly because we're depressed.
That's the subtitle for this podcast. I declare it. Don't argue with me.
I didn't think they would go all the way and, violate Sansa. I thought Brienne would bust in or Reek would rise to the occasion and or something would happen.
You know, I've hated that character since episode one, but I'm so pissed. I really do hate this show. That was awful.
In the books, it was Sansa's best friend. Childhood friend, her handmaiden that was sort of
Jane Poole,
who was kidnapped and dragged back north and forced to pretend to be Arya Stark.
Yeah, she was
to marry Ramsay, so the crappiness of Ramsay, making Reek watch the wedding night, that all happened to poor Jane Poole. And so apparently on the show, Sansa has to suffer as Jane suffered. But in the books, Sansa's still, unsullied.
She joined the Unsullied.
That's a real different, that's real departure from the book.
Yeah, it's a big one. I mean, it's definitely an economical way to collapse down what's happening to certain characters and simplify things. Honestly, I'm fairly okay with the way they've consolidated a lot of storylines. The way things came together in Dorne, although it's maybe a little bit convenient that the Sand Snake attack out completely coincided with the Jaime Bronn incursion.
Yeah.
That was a little too convenient, but otherwise it got the job done. And Myrcella got away unscathed, which she did not in the books.
Right, she lost a...
She was accidentally injured
Didn't she lose an ear or something?
Yeah, disfigured. Something like that.
That scene did feel a little bit like a 1970s sitcom, where all of a sudden right. Sharks and the Jets all find themselves in the,
And the idea that...
Or a plot twist in a comic book.
Right, yes.
Superman and Batman show up at the same time and get in a misunderstanding brawl.
Mm-hmm.
It was nice to see, become reacquainted with Myrcella and meet her boyfriend. Tristan, was it? Tristan. Tristain. Martell.
I'll kiss you if I want. I'm going to
sure
marry
you.
He
sure was pretty. I'd kiss him.
So we got to meet Doran Martell's chief guard.
Right.
Whose name escapes me and who wields a polearm, not an axe.
Editor's note.
But
the weapon appearing in this scene is actually a polearm.
And
you're okay, or is with it a pole axe? The action being condensed, but not with the weapon change. Got it.
People aren't going to know what a polearm is, or
Yeah, you're right. No one who watches the show ever played Dungeons and Dragons.
Right? They all did.
They all did it.
Over America. Somebody on the couch is saying polearm. It's a polearm.
What are some of those polearm names from the Player's Handbook, Craig?
Oh man,
Chuck.
This is a test of how far you went into the Player's Handbook. Let's see.
Robert Guillaume.
There's a Guizarm.
Guizarm.
It's probably not pronounced Guizarm. A Guizarm. A Bill Guisarme, a halberd bread.
Halberd.
A
halberd. Halberd.
Halberd.
Et
cetera.
Well, it's one of those before it's an axe, but
clearly.
And they cost like 20. They cost like 20
Nobody
silver.
Even heard me snoring.
I mean, I would have been okay with it.
I think we lost the ladies in the audience chat.
We're discussing pole weapons.
I'm sorry. What?
If they would have cut to the guard's eye roll when he said axe, I would have been fine with it. Yes, sir, my axe.
That would have made it better.
But that was good economical collapsing of chapters of Dornish drudgery from A Feast for Crows. So that was well done, I guess. And also, I was pretty cool with Jorah and Tyrion's,
bonding moment
encounter. Well, the bonding moment was great, actually. It was nice to finally connect Jorah back to Lord Commander Mormont in a kind of touching way, and it helped reestablish Jorah, who's been absent from the show for a season or so, you know, in any meaningful way. And basically everything, like Tyrion's whole conversation, this sort of like saying, all right, so we're going to go there, like, you know, him talking through imagining what Jorah's plan is. Let's just hypothetically say, you know, that she's cool with you delivering me and she takes you back into her good graces and she goes and conquers Westeros where she's never been as an adult before. And, you know, it was good for a character to talk it all through, because that's true. That's what we're talking about. And what does it really mean? And what's his loyalty to her?
Well, he's also trying to kind of get out of meeting Daenerys on those terms too, right? I mean, he doesn't want to be, he would probably love for Jorah to take him right up to her doorstep and then fuck off. Like, okay, let me handle this. You don't need to do your thing.
Mm. Yeah.
Don't deliver me, you know, but he wants the bodyguard while he's traveling, 'cause he still intends to go there, right?
Well, that was
Tyrion?
That was Varys' vision for him, right? Anyway, and which he was going along with sort of by default, as long as there was some wine, hopefully.
I got nothing
involved.
Better to do. I just killed my dad.
But it was cool. I mean, basically, now we see that Tyrion has sobered up enough, mm-hmm. where he's actually thinking about, what does this really mean? What am I getting myself into? Mm-hmm. And just the fact that he's intelligently thinking through what am I going to bring to the mm-hmm. table here? What is, you know, he's trying to logically think, who is Daenerys? What does it mean? He says all that stuff about, you know, the Targaryens are infamously mad, mm-hmm. you know, and,
but he's the learned character. I mean, none of this can be too, I mean, somebody has to rule, and all the rulers are, I guess their claims to the crown are never based on anything more than brute force.
True. But he's
ill. So it's a little bit disingenuous for him to be calling into question Jorah's loyalty to Daenerys only based on her claim, right?
But he's kind of trying to feel her out to gauge what, you know, who this chick is and what the deal is.
It's true. Yeah, he's right. He's trying to coax Jorah into sharing a little information, which he's not so far.
I think
begrudgingly has a little, I guess.
Tyrion's at least entertaining the possibility of, is there any reason for me to get excited about helping this person as opposed to other people?
Sense. Yeah, I can see that.
Even though he might not have come to any conclusion there, he's illustrating what value he could be to Daenerys mm-hmm. in terms of he is understanding what her shortcomings might be. So his intimate knowledge of Westeros and history and knowing how to saddle a dragon and fly that pepper.
Coming back to Tyrion the Dragon Rider.
This again.
It's happening, you guys.
Oh, have you ever heard a little puppy dragon sing?
That was odd. But it was cool hearing Jorah talk so about cute. Daenerys to a third party who doesn't
right.
know.
Baby right. dragon song. Mm-hmm. Which we only had that a little bit when he is boasting for her to people that they're about to vanquish or get on with, but also to Barristan, maybe Selmy for a minute. Like, didn't they have kind of a back and forth with, like, who deserves it or who who means it or.
I'm her best helper. I'm her best helper.
Helper number one.
But yeah, no, that was a good aside for us.
It was cool, but I like the way that the slavers came along, introduced some danger. I mean, there was some near cock cutting off that was
plus introduced a little mystery to be resolved in a later episode. The true size.
Tyrion's the true size.
Dwarf sized or not.
Get those pants off.
This episode could have been called a dwarf lives until we find a cock merchant.
I mean, I gotta say that's probably one of the
cock merchants.
One of the least
gotta be a real niche market.
One of the least oft uttered phrases ever.
Well, and
the dwarf lives until we find a cock merchant.
Yeah. Well, and just before I love when they're, you know, he's just about to have his throat slit, and he's like, no. But then the minute that the size of his cock is called into question, he's like, oh, think again.
He's like, yeah. I don't think so, buddy.
We gotta get
that. Just get that knife out of my face.
Bold.
Bold
move on Tyrion's part.
Mm-hmm. They could ask Shay.
But I'm excited at the prospect of Jorah the Gladiator.
Yeah.
Which happened in the books as well, right?
Kind of.
Jorah does kidnap Tyrion at some point, right? We talked about that last week, that they cut a whole loop out and just got right to the point where Tyrion is kidnapped by
Jorah. Let's wait till next week when Mike is back and who's fresh from his reading and can... I know they all end up there in the company of, or in service to one of the free companies in Marine. I don't
know.
Right,
it was the seventh sons? Or this?
Five better than the second sons.
The second sons, sorry.
Five right. better.
Five better. Five worse.
But
five
there worse. Was there was talk of the fighting pits. And
five less relevant.
I thought we might have seen that this week, but we know it's still coming. I was also happy with the way they consolidated the faith, basically imprisoning Margaery. So we had the holy trial.
So that
trial.
Did come around, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we should have maybe seen that coming in a sense.
So you think Cersei knew that was going to happen? She looked pretty smug at the end.
I think she orchestrated it.
The whole thing?
Some part of it.
Yeah.
Boy.
If not the whole thing.
She knew who the material witnesses were going to be and what they were going to say.
Yeah.
There's no way she could have known how it would play out exactly, but it couldn't have played out better, you know, if she had planned it.
She's so smart.
Just that look at Lady...
Olenna.
Olenna at the end was like, oh, now I've got your son and your daughter.
Right. First time the Queen of Thorns has been
ain't
put in place.
Ain't that a bitch.
Wow.
But what they didn't address was the Queen of Thorns' not veiled threat of, how about I stop giving you gold and grain and arms?
You know what? And how about the fact that Cersei Lannister doesn't really have an army or any way to hold on to power? Why the hell is anybody doing what she wants anyway?
Because in the power vacuum of Tywin being gone, there's no one really to check her power. Tyrion told Jorah this week.
Right.
Which was interesting. I don't know if Jorah felt sorry for him in that moment or whatever, but probably not much.
Well, he also dropped the bombshell on Jorah that Jorah didn't know.
Right.
By the way.
Fuck, man.
That's a big bombshell, too. Not only did your dad die, but
he gave your sword to some bastard punk.
Yeah.
He doesn't know about that.
That was terrible. It's all terrible now. Everything.
I hate this fucking show.
Yeah.
Fuck. The new refrain, dark wings, dark words. I hate this fucking show.
The Game of Thrones bitch fest.
Episode, it doesn't matter. Season, whatever.
I can't even.
And how about Arya and the fast-paced lifestyle of corpse maintenance?
Well, now you know where those faces go to be recycled into regular...
The old face library.
The old face library.
So is it just my faulty memory, or is so much in the book really presented vaguely, only sort of hinted at, whereas in the show they're kind of saying, it sounds like... There's a hall of faces, but I don't recall anything like that.
I feel
books.
Like we'll have
now,
to
if this
ask...
were a Tolkien novel, there would have been a whole chapter describing that chamber. You know, not a whole chapter, but at least several pages.
I don't recall the face library being explicitly described.
Ooh, the face library.
We can check with Mike, because he seemed to have a fairly clear idea of what they did with the bodies.
It's a Robert E. Face Memorial Library.
Dewey Decimal System.
Dewey Defacimal. It's
something more in the 240s.
A girl must learn to categorize correctly.
It's a big wooden cabinet with lots of little drawers. You see?
So presumably the idea is the people that go to the temple to the faceless god to commit suicide.
And they drink the restorative waters.
He's the god of poison. Many faces, isn't he?
Many faces?
Yeah.
What are they?
The many face god. Many face okay. God. The many face god. The idea is you go there to kill yourself for whatever reason, and they're just still like, here, drink this.
So Jochen was impressed finally with Arya's ability to bullshit and play the game.
And kill an innocent.
Yep. And then he's like, all right, you can come see the place.
But
you're not ready to become no one, but you're ready to become someone else.
I mean, that's pulled right out of the novels. There's, you know, they provide a service for people that, you know.
Right. Apparently a very brisk only service do so because much. The gurney guys are like, shuffling corpses left and right.
I mean, it's what, get back it's what to they work. Do. Yeah.
Business, the death business was booming in the Middle Ages. And
business is good.
so it's like a mortuary too.
But so presumably the idea, the implication is if you go there to kill yourself, they'll preserve your face and it'll become one of the identities that can be used by any of the faceless men on their missions.
Well,
right?
They don't really know that though, do they? I mean, it's not well known.
It's not explicitly explained. That's my understanding.
Yeah. No, I thought you meant the people who are going
like
there.
The father who brought
I really
his
want
daughter.
To go die there, and then my face will be immortalized.
Nobody who kills himself there knows what's up.
Right. Okay.
But that's what I infer.
It just seems like a humane place to go when all other options are exhausted. That's what the sense that I got from the father who was bringing his daughter, you know. Like, I don't know what else to do. I want her suffering to end. Okay. We'll take care of it from here.
That was actually...
Again, sad. Very sad show.
What they're doing. Jesus. Their preservative technology well ahead of its time.
I thought when Arya poked the one old lady's face...
Of course you thought her eyes were going to open.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. Who didn't?
It looked so... I mean, it looked like an actress... You know, it almost moving or possibly, I don't know, it looked like those eyes were going to pop open for sure. And I thought maybe Arya's face was going to change in that moment. I thought maybe when she killed the little girl or helped the little girl kill herself, that at some point we'd see her with that little girl's face.
Yeah, right. Is there a connection
there? We may
there?
Still.
Too
we,
soon, we man. May. Too soon.
Are you only
Cat
able
of
to
the
change
canals.
Into the
Cat
people
of the canals.
You helped?
There you go.
Oh, I don't know.
Probably
so
not.
So we'll
maybe.
Find out.
Mm-hmm.
Were you expecting there to be some overt supernatural element to the god of many faces, to the faceless men, is that what they call the assassins? But
the faceless men, yeah.
Yeah. So were you expecting there to be, and I'm wondering again, horrible memory, is there a scene, something connected to the non-existent TV plot in Old Town where the faceless man actually does something supernatural?
Well, we've already seen it once.
Just changing his face.
Jochen Hagar at the end of one of the seasons
changed his face. You're right.
Right in front of you. He looked at Arya and he turned away and then he turned back and he was someone else.
Did he do one of these?
Chuck's running his hand vertically across his face for those of you.
Yeah. Chuck.
Now he's nodding. Now he's shaking his head.
Chuck, no, you're sad. Right. Thank you, Greg. There is an overt supernatural element.
You know, that's the thing with TV, though, or I guess with anything, the way they deliver it is you don't know if he's. Maybe all these people do is affect another person's mind and affect their perception.
It's true.
Maybe he's not, doesn't. But that wouldn't fit the plot where they've gotten their expert assassins because no one knows who they really are. So
well, but if they can just
I would say,
hey, presto, change your face. What do they need to, you know, index the faces in their cavern for?
So I would call that supernatural. That would be one of the few things that happened on the show.
This is what I'd like to think is the case. Jake and Hagar, who was the man who gave Arya the coin, had the face that is now her mentor in the temple. I'd like to think that this is a different person who just happens to be using the same face.
Oh.
I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, you said that a couple weeks or last week, and I didn't give it much credence, but now I think there's a better chance if that's the case.
Because especially with the fake out with the other girl, where it's she told her the Westerosi story, like, I'm just like you, and Arya ate it up, and then she's like, you fucking idiot. You believe that shit?
Every time she talks to her.
You believe that shit?
You should, because it's true. Or is it?
Where's my cane?
Clean some more corpses and we'll talk.
Yeah, get back to
work. Or will we? Here's a freak out for you. I'm the other guy.
Huh?
I'm that guy. Yeah. I'm this guy. Why I'm every not? Guy.
And no guy.
You don't know what to believe.
I am no one.
Just wipe some corpses down, will you?
Okay, do you mind if I delve into criticism of the ontology of George Martin's TV world here? So
I'll get a drink.
Yeah, right. gonna go there anyway. God. So magic reappearing in the world is a theme in the book, that magic went away with the doom of Valyria, and something's happening to bring the magic back, right? Remember, that's that...
Red Comet.
Red Comet.
Yep.
Do dragons fall into that?
And the dragons reappearing, and that means like the wildfire, you know, the alchemists got in stronger. King's Landing couldn't really create wildfire like they used to, but now all of a sudden
like we have like
can.
12,000 pots.
And right, and the walkers are showing up.
Oh, yeah,
all,
the walkers.
You know, mm-hmm. all...
We're like in a 1,000-year cycle or something. Something.
Well, and that's, I mean, that's a good question. Is it a cycle, or was there something that was in the world previously that was absent and now is back and is leading to the dormant resolution of the greater narrative of the whole book outside of the characters? But right. I'm talking about the, you know, the nature of the reality that they're
Chuck's
describing.
Back.
Because most of the time it was,
I'm going to catch him up. We're talking about the return of magic to the world, the return of the supernatural and powerful, all that sort of stuff.
But if that's truly a theme, then what's up with the faceless men? Because they seem to have their magic undiminished.
Well, maybe if it's just been dormant, maybe it's gotten small and only been retained in small places.
But I don't think it didn't have to go away completely. The book that they've ever reference the idea that the faceless men are now all of a sudden better at their magic, which all you know, or the magic is more present or more available to them, as it is in all those other cases.
I feel like they don't fall in with the rest of the magic in the world. Kind of Tom Bombadilly.
Who's Tom
Bombadilly? Tom
Bombadilly is a character in The Lord of the Rings who unfortunately never appeared in the movies. Oh.
You never read the Tom Bombadilly?
It's just a list of names.
Have you guys read The Silmarillion?
I tried twice and I never got past like 100 pages.
Who would read that?
I've read it like 10 times.
What?
It's freaking awesome.
What?
Oh, man. We'll have to do our Lord of the Rings episode one of these days.
It's canon, the Lord of the Rings universe, but it's really like the book of Genesis.
The first part of it is. Oh, okay. After that, it's the history of the elves in the First Age.
Is there just a lot of listing of names?
No, it's not. That's
okay,
below
well,
me. That's
because
more
if
like
it
the,
is, then it's like the book of Leviticus, I think. Is that the... or Numbers?
It starts out with a creation story, and it defines the nature of Tolkien's reality and how the world first begins, and then it goes into, you know, all the elvish characters that are referenced obliquely
in
movies or stuff. So it's that background history. That's what makes it interesting, is that Tolkien's whole universe is consistent, narratively consistent, and thematically consistent over a huge amount of storytelling. And that's one of my fundamental criticisms of Martin as a writer.
You feel like
the HBO show is, if anything, I think has been a little bit more consistent than Martin was ever able to achieve
in his books.
In his books, yes.
You feel like the
overarching point why I brought
the faceless men not having their magic diminish and then return is inconsistent with the the dragons and the White Walkers going away and coming back.
Right.
Well, think about, there's other instances of magic remaining in the world. Like the children of the forest didn't die off or go away, or they went away. They hid, but they have always existed.
I was always under the impression that they diminished greatly. They used to be much more populous, and they were all over the place, and now there's very few of them, and they're all trapped up in the north.
But they didn't cease to exist.
It's true.
And they continued to watch through the eyes of the white trees.
And their caves are still warded.
The wall itself is magically warded and exists through sheer force of magic. Otherwise, the wall,
with magic, but once it's built, it's a big block of ice. It ain't going nowhere.
Well, it weeps and it melts, but I think it would have just melted away at some point. But then there's also the thing of, which didn't happen on the show, when Bran and his party cross through the secret passage north of the wall, there's something about, is it Cold Hands? Escorted Sam to the wall and helped him and Gilly cross over through the wall, but he's like, I can't go.
Right. There is some sort of,
I can't cross this way because I'm some sort of icy undead guy and I can't go south.
Given. Okay. I'll take that.
Well, that's something. Whole thing is, that's an example
you're
of magic.
You're adding to my feeling that the narrative in the books themselves are inconsistent.
Well,
I don't think he's thought through the basic elements of what is real in my universe, and he hasn't done a good job of explaining it through the narrative.
But his
fuck that guy.
His narrative approach.
I don't even care if he ever finishes the fucking story.
There's so much that he alludes to and lets you sort of interpret and read between the lines. He doesn't spell it all out for you.
So if that was on purpose,
because he wants to reserve the point of discovery for narrative impact.
So Chris, if that was if he did it on purpose, you have to be okay with it.
I feel like that's giving him a lot of credit.
You don't give him enough credit.
I think I give him plenty of credit. He's not the worst.
You're here.
Yeah, I'm like here on a freaking Sunday night talking about his stuff, though. It's
I'm just
bitter because that think. Last scene just disturbed
me. We get it. You're quitting.
What a horrible note to end on this episode.
Fuck.
We're ignoring the absolute most insulting thing that's happened to women in this show.
Ooh.
When Bronn says to the snakeholders, "That's pretty good for a little girl." Oh, no, I'm kidding. That you're talking about Sansa.
That was way worse.
That was bad too.
No, it was great though. It was great for his character and for her character. I mean, shit, those girls were kicking ass.
You're talking about Bronn, right?
Oh. Yeah.
Okay. You're not talking about Sansa.
That was
right?
Pretty good for a little girl. No, I did that on purpose.
No, but that's a great parting comment for him, basically, get her cockles up.
Yeah.
Or
her lack of
her
cockles.
Lack of cockles.
Her cockle envy.
A girl shall live till we get to a cockle merchant.
No, I did that on purpose. I derailed your...
Yes.
But back to
misdirection.
Sansa.
Classic misdirection.
But back to the horrible deflowering of poor Sansa of House Stark.
You said before we started podcasting, and I thought it too, that you said, I thought something would happen. Either Brienne would bust in or Theon would suddenly come, get to his breaking point, and no, god damn it.
I wanted that to happen, but I didn't expect it. I expected worse
Theon's
from Ramsay
broken.
Bolton.
I
think more is to come.
At one point, I thought that Sansa was going to kind of stand up to Ramsay for a second.
Right.
Just a little bit, kind of like a hey.
She could assert herself at this point until he gets a baby out of her. She should have some freaking leverage.
So what do you think? How about Mel? What's the girl's name? Girl who's washing
Miranda.
Her hair? Miranda. So Miranda's speech to her and the whole, do you think that she was purely just turning the thumbscrews, or do you think she was in any way trying to
help Sansa?
Trying to warn... Well...
No.
trying to dissuade her somehow, you know, like
trying to scare her into trying to flee or something.
Yeah, that's
doing something that would hasten her eventual end.
Yeah,
maybe trying to trick her into not going through with the wedding. Basically.
Well, not even trick her,
not trick her out of the wedding. I mean, those were her warnings were genuine.
All those things happened, and in fact, was that had we seen? Now I realize that we might have seen Miranda 2 seasons ago.
I think she was with the
remember
party.
The scene where they were in the running through the forest and they were chasing the girl and they brought her down with the bow and the dogs got her.
I think that's the hunt that she alluded to.
Me too.
She was in that scene.
Well, she may have been. How would
she
we know?
He let me go along.
Yeah. So right. I don't know if that was the same actress, but definitely
wasn't
was,
she sort of pretending to help a girl escape and then.
Yeah, it was something
was
really
just
terrible.
Tricking her into running away so that Ramsay could hunt her down with the dogs.
I mean,
Ramsay
bending her over and raping her on her wedding night is really mild for Ramsay. I mean, there are some really bad things that he has done and will do.
He didn't pull any fingernails out.
Yeah,
he didn't break her down and turn her into a dog.
But you know,
right. I'm wasting all this sympathy on Sansa. Still, it was her husband.
Still, the worst day
of her
life.
Come on, Sansa.
At this point, man,
could have been worse. Could have pulled your fingernails out.
Did anyone else think she was going to pull a knife out of her sleeve?
I thought she would assert herself somehow. I thought she would find a way to manipulate the situation to prevent her. At least temporarily prevent her deflowering, and that it would be an ongoing battle because he needs to get her pregnant. Or,
well, yeah, that's
you know,
that
at this point,
thing.
He can't just kill her, right?
She showed her naivete, her naiveness, whatever, however you pronounce that word. But she showed again that she is actually quite naive, you know, because Tyrion was kind to her and didn't force her to do that thing. And, you know, I did this for you, you know, not that. I mean, I just was thinking that in the back of my mind. And now my hope is that she will, like, get fixated on the notion of first chance she gets, slit his throat. I mean, I was thinking about that. I was thinking, too, like, there's
that'd
probably consequences.
And therefore it's not going to happen.
Right.
Sorry.
Right, I know.
No, when she was slowly unlacing her sleeve, I was like, please let there be a dagger.
Yeah, I thought about that. And I was like, just kill him. Just you don't even know how bad this guy is.
Reek, distract him, and then Sansa just knife him in the aorta.
I remember thinking, hoping, come on, Theon. Now's your time, man.
I know.
Redemption time, Theon, but no way.
The fact that he had to say his name as Theon, and he had to identify as Theon. Now, as soon as he was in the room, he was Reek again, but he had to perform a kind of dignified human function as his old self. I thought that might, and it still might, because he was crying as he
you
was
could
watching.
See, I mean, when he basically had to say, "I was her father's ward." I mean, he has to feel such a weight of guilt. Of oh my god, I fucked my life and everybody else's life. I'm such a piece of shit.
The part that makes me really realize that Reek is still under, or just definitely all the way under Ramsay's thumb, is that once Reek was alone with Sansa and saying, "I have to walk you up the thing." That he didn't say to her, "Listen, I didn't kill your brothers."
Right.
You know, he had a chance.
I hoped for that too.
Yeah. He had a chance to say it there, and the fact that he didn't.
But he's too scared to do that.
He's too scared.
Yeah. No,
he's too
broken.
Far gone.
When I thought too, there was an opportunity for her to show him some kindness, any kindness. Now
nah,
I understand
but
why
would she?
I understand why she wouldn't, but it would be so redemptive for him. It might be all he needs to just.
If Reek had murdered Ramsay before he entered Sansa, then she might have like, all right, you can hold my arm now.
Right. Even kind of.
Okay.
Theon, you get the reward.
Okay, maybe. All
no,
right.
But, so back to I, you know, was talking about her. They made something earlier. Was it last season about Sansa's character changed a little bit under the influence of Littlefinger.
That's all our projection. And that's partially from the books, where the book sets it up I'm going to tutor you.
There was a scene where she manipulates somebody, or I mean, it kind of showed a little edge to her.
She helped Littlefinger manipulate Little Lord Robin.
And that
that's the extent of her.
But
sort
there
of,
was a conversation down in the kind of grave area with, you know, where she seemed smarter. She seemed more savvy. She was only doing it conversationally, but she said, I think by the time I see you next, I'll be married. Mm-hmm. She seemed to kind of understand the political interplay and her part in it. And well, so plus, that gave her, that lent her just, a little aura of, you know,
savvy. But ultimately, she's just letting Littlefinger manipulate her into being in a position where she's going to be raped by Ramsay so that he can go back to King's Landing and leverage the situation into make me Warden of the North. So it's all serving Littlefinger and it's not helping her in the least. I mean, she's in the worst possible position she could be in, where she's in the thrall of Ramsay, the worst living human on the show. And this we're talking about a country that Joffrey existed in.
Yes. Like, and he's back talking to Cersei and saying, "Oh, you want her head on a spike? You know, I live to serve. It's good."
Exactly. So you're right. In light of that, I was bitching the last couple of weeks. Like, this Littlefinger's plan is dumb. Like, he's expressed a love, a sick, twisted desire for Sansa, and also expressed an interest in. Because he was sickly in love with her.
And if he were really trying to dupe her, if he was just using her, he wouldn't go that route because it obviously, you know, appalls her, right? And he's not stupid. He's perceptive.
He weirdly wants her to be his protege. He weirdly wants her to be his object of affection. But he also unweirdly wants to just use her for his own ends.
He wants the North. He asked Cersei for it. So maybe in his grand scheme of things, he goes and takes her.
Right. So
we get Ramsay out of the way, then you're my wife, and yay.
I feel a little bit better about his grand scheme now because it's like I put the pieces in play, and by me putting her in danger, it still helps my game.
Why was it? Because he didn't reveal to Cersei until this episode that he was in possession of Sansa Stark.
He never admitted that she was in his possession. He said, "I discovered her."
Yeah,
I was like, "I found Sansa. She's about to marry Ramsay up in Winterfell. She's like safe and secure up there, and they're going to do this thing. So how about you let me take care of it?"
So how is he going to?
He's going to march the army of the Vale north. The case that he made to Cersei is Sansa's marching south from the Wall, and Stannis and the Boltons are going to fight.
Right.
Somebody's going to win. Somebody's going to lose. But whoever wins is going to be licking their wounds, and I'm going to be on them ASAP with the armies of the Vale. Okay. Before the winters come, I'll clean that up, tidy it up real nice. You make me the Warden of the North. Mm-hmm. And how about that?
He's probably thinking, and it'll be lucky if Sansa lives, and then I'll just, you know, she'll be with
if
me.
She does. And if great. She does, if not, if she doesn't, it's no big deal.
But why did he need to send
Sansa to the Boltons in the first place? If that's
because what he knew that was the only thing that would motivate Cersei into okaying his incursion. I mean, that's the way the show presents it. I think.
The desire to get rid of Sansa?
Because Cersei wants Sansa's head on a pike more than she gives a shit about anything else. She's not smart. Cersei thinks she's so smart, but she's undermining her own interests by going, like, stirring shit up with Highgarden.
Well, we've learned in this episode that she can't even write.
And by allowing the Faith Militants... I wanted them to cut to what she was writing when she finally put the quill down and just have it say, "Fuck you, fuck 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 you."
All right.
Fuck your bitch face. Fuck your wrinkly old bitch face.
I hate you.
No, I guess, I don't know. That I'm a little still mystified as to Littlefinger's true motivation. I don't think that his request of Cersei, not sure that's genuine. I think he's manipulating her somehow. There's something, another shoe to drop.
Here's kind of a controversial thing. We've talked before about sort of the openness of the gay relationships that Loras has had, like with Renly and beyond, and how everyone kind of was more or less okay with it, even though it was somewhat scandalous. Like, they keep saying everybody knows it, but nobody cares, right? And now all of a sudden, it's like a holy sin just to be gay. Is it? Doesn't that kind of undermine the position that the show was taking in terms of what is the state of homosexuality in Westeros?
I mean, this is all the faith militant, right?
But is it
basically just helping to underline that the faith militant are wrong because they're that extreme? Because everybody else is cool with it, but the faith militant are dicks about it.
Yeah, I mean, mostly before people were just laughed about it. They were just like, you know, gay Renly. But it didn't affect anything, really, right? I mean, it didn't make anything happen or not happen.
Right. Well, because it almost seemed like, you know, Westeros, you know, that was cool.
Right.
Or just fine. Or yeah. Accepted, but not spoken about. That, you know,
it's not that different from how modern society is in some ways.
I guess that's right. So right. It's exactly like modern, and
it goes into this book being more about power politics than fantasy fiction, because the powers that be are all secular. They all have, they refer to the gods, but it's not like the Baratheons were devout. None of them were devout. Stannis wasn't. I mean, he's faking this whole red god thing.
Right.
I mean, none of them. None of the characters, other than maybe Catelyn and Ned Stark, showed any real piety, I guess you'd say. I don't think.
But I mean,
the rest of it's manipulation.
Compare the faith militant to just some real right wing, you know, hyper conservative.
What was the guy down in Kansas City?
I was going to say Fred Phelps, but
what would be the first thing if the religious right had actual political power?
Right.
The first thing they do is throw gay people in jail.
Well, look at that. So that happened in Uganda. That's modern day. It's probably where you can still get executed for being gay. That's recent. That was put
everywhere but Iran, because they don't have any gays in Iran.
It is true that it's been cyclical. I mean, being gay was real okay in a certain time period in Greek history, and then, you know, then you contrast that with another time period like puritanical America in the beginnings, where it wasn't even okay to be a woman. You know, you're a witch if you were. Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, it's cyclical there. And I like that they're kind of showing that. They're showing how politics can be swayed, and Cersei is kind of helping this cause because it serves her in some way, and that's probably no different from politics now.
She'll sacrifice anyone.
Right.
So,
but she's sacrificing her own interests by undermining.
Well, like you said, she's too passionate.
Right, right. She's underlined the real source of her power, which is, you know, just power base, secular. I mean, she wasn't dependent. Right. She's short-sighted. She's obviously...
She's not a strategist.
She has these because she thinks it's going to help her.
Personal vendettas against her imagined sort of, you know, undermining at the hands of Margaery.
She is just... And everything she does, she thinks she's so smart and she's just wrong. It's going to blow up in her face.
It's going to blow up in her face. And actually, they left it at a perfect place where she's so imperious and so proud of the fact that she got Margaery thrown in jail and got to throw it back in, Lady Olenna's face. She's like primed for the takedown now, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know if this is in the books, but this is what I hope, that Daenerys comes, claims the throne, and that she and Cersei just have a slap fest.
Big old bitch fight.
They take their wigs off, they take their earrings off, and just go at each other.
Oh, it's on now. I don't know if those two will ever face off, because we'll basically know. The people that have a reason to take Cersei down, Daenerys is not one of those people.
It's a nice little fantasy, though.
I think Sansa's the one that has the comeuppance for Cersei.
Whew.
Oh, yeah. Sansa should be the one.
Sansa should be the one that lays a smackdown on Cersei.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. But I think we kind of know from the books that Cersei lays her own smackdown, and we're watching it happen.
That's the thing is, Cersei's not going to be...
Marjorie and Cersei. That's a real factor by the time
Daenerys gets to Westeros.
But Marjorie doesn't deserve it as much because she's so sort of bald-facedly self-interested. Whereas poor Sansa...
She has been wronged.
Ultimately, I mean, we all want redemption for the Starks more than anything, right?
Sansa's best days...
That's a huge theme in this whole arc.
She was the one character that really was more or less unsullied of the Starks. I mean, the rest of them have been either outright killed or put in really horrible situations, but Sansa's been sort of the, you know, she's... has her...
Then again, her best days were when she was married to Tyrion.
But help me remember, so in, when
But even that was not so bad.
No, that part wasn't bad. She was
Which safe. For the first time she acknowledged in this episode.
I mean, certainly like, she's
Tyrion
been...
was kind to me.
But Joffrey...
Yeah. She never told him that.
What was her part in Joffrey's death again? I know she had the necklace with the poison in it.
Nothing. Not that she knew of.
But was that Littlefinger's machination?
Lady Olenna put the necklace on her.
Olenna, okay.
And then the jewel from the necklace was missing,
mm-hmm.
and it was presumably like the poison pod that ended up in Joffrey's chalice.
They do not expressly say that in the book.
But Sansa is unaware.
Or the show,
really did not have a part to play in that. No. Cersei thinks that she does, but...
Lady Olenna is the one that poisoned Joffrey, if it wasn't clear at all.
Right.
Because she gave Sansa the necklace, and then that happened.
How did it get into his drink, though?
Somebody came along.
A stone was crushed.
Didn't Lady Olenna say, oh, your necklace is crooked? Or did somebody touch the necklace at the wedding itself and then give Joffrey a drink?
Touch of the necklace.
I think it was just straight
you
up
drink
Olenna.
Drink this, you pouty little fuck.
God, that was a great
fuck.
Episode. I was so happy that he died. Oh my gosh. I was so happy.
Oh yeah.
Whew.
Much deserved.
He was so bad.
This was the tamest wedding we've seen tonight, and then right after that, I really thought that Ramsay might take a little bit of time before he really turned into a terrible fucker.
Yeah, I thought that he might try to convince her a little bit that he wants her to be happy.
Right, only to bullshit her,
demonstrates immediately what a psychotic freaking asshole he is.
He tipped his hand at that dinner last week.
That's true.
He totally tipped his hand. That's like, she should have known, oh my God, who the fuck is this guy? Right. He should have stayed cool at least a couple weeks longer, you know, whatever.
So the stuff that Miranda was telling her this week couldn't have been that big of a surprise to her, since you're right, because she witnessed him
She responded in a way that wasn't like, oh my God, tell me more about these hunts. What are you talking about? Yeah. It was more like, so you're in love with this
And that's where
fucker.
She demonstrated some, you know, deductive skill.
Yeah, I mean, some awareness of her situation and that she needs to...
Remember that she saved Littlefinger's ass when the Moon Door thing happened. I mean, she really thought on her feet. She lied her ass off.
Mm-hmm.
Another sign of
savvy. She convinced
people. Good acting job.
She did.
Mm-hmm.
And now that's all gone. She's like not even...
Yeah.
I mean, she's back helpless. To being the she's helpless totally Sansa helpless. That she was at the beginning. And I don't know why they... And started to introduce that element of a character change
for her. Which she voluntarily put herself in that position. Like, Littlefinger's like, you know, you could be shrewd and do this thing.
Well, but that's the role she's playing right now.
And then she came down the stairs in the black dress with the white... Yeah. And it was the end of an episode, and it looked real good. Like, okay, she's going to...
But Littlefinger didn't say, you know, just get raped a few times, and then you'll really get over on these guys.
Well, but I suppose she knows if she's going to be shrewd, I mean, she's going to have to submit to Ramsay.
I think she's going to come back stronger from this. I don't think
it's not like the rest of the women in Westeros have it all that well, because they're all arranged marriages and they're the wedding and the bedding or whatever. I mean, it's a whole thing.
They go,
let's send them upstairs. It's time to rape the new wife.
Show the bloody sheets.
I mean, that's kind
of
their culture. Mm-hmm. So she knows she has to. I guess I'm doing what I criticize.
Well, she wasn't
applying my own moral context to this world, where their moral context was like the argument when I said that the rape by Jaime was not as offensive a crime as it would be in our moral
context. The showrunners agreed with
you. Different freaking world.
Did you know that?
Do?
I saw an interview.
I'm almost disappointed to hear that.
Well, no, they said the whole that was not supposed to be like a rape scene, and you know, the internet went
after the whole firestorm about in the, I suppose. I mean, I heard a little bit of it, mostly.
Well, in a way, Cersei or Sansa, that situation, in a way, that wasn't a rape. I mean,
she knew what she was getting into.
It wasn't against her will. It just was really fucking miserable awful. For her. It just was awful, and the way he handled it was awful.
Maybe
and...
she's already plotting Ramsay's demise.
Yeah,
maybe
I think,
she,
if right. anything,
this is just
the
step she had to go through to establish
it. Right. Well, it was inevitable. Theon watch and him calling Theon Reek. I mean, that
it couldn't have
be
been
more
uglier.
Disturbing to her.
Right.
Right.
You know, for all the physical discomfort and all of the terribleness of losing her virginity in this way. I mean, all that's horrible. That's been horrible throughout the ages. But something in her, if she's smart enough to have caught it, should have told her how bad he is by the way he treated Reek. Although she indicated that she doesn't have a lot of sympathy for him. Like, I don't mm-hmm. give a fuck how he punishes you.
Well, she
so,
thinks he killed her brothers, both.
But it right. still should give her a clue about Ramsay. We'll see how smart she is. I always so want her to be smarter than she is.
I think I want her to be more effective, you know? I want her to...
In the logic of the show, maybe this is what she has to go through to Littlefinger for putting her in that position. Even though she volunteered for it, he kind of set her up for it.
And she needs to really come to hate Ramsay.
She needs to come
evidence.
To hate Littlefinger, which she doesn't.
Well, she doesn't have that figured out yet. At
all. She doesn't understand, and maybe never will, the extent to which Littlefinger caused her father to be killed.
I feel like even if all this shit goes down, and even if she finds out that Littlefinger did all this, he'll have one, you misunderstand, talk with her, and somehow she just still won't understand.
This is how the world works.
I don't think, this has to be the end of naive Sansa.
Well, I'm hoping, but you know, I'm hoping for a look. You know, they could have done anything with the character besides her just being... in mortal fear.
Well,
you know, they've shown some awareness that
they laid the groundwork for her to go into the top window of the burnt tower
and summon
Brienne to come save
her. That's right.
And so that'll be her act of defiance, which is still kind of weak, but
which at some point we're going to see previously on Game of Thrones, and she's going to say that, and then that episode, the thing. God, don't make me think ahead.
That's what that has to happen.
I know, but I never do. You do. That gets your gears turned.
But now we know that Stannis is headed for Winterfell. Littlefinger and the Army of the Vale are headed for Winterfell.
Now even more.
But after they kill each other a little bit.
After.
Yeah, I'll just come in and clean up the mess. He's such a snake.
At least they're, you know, there's some good old fashioned warring on the horizon here. Yay. Mm-hmm.
We still have things to talk about. What big set pieces did we miss? Did we talk about
Bronn singing the Dornish wife or whatever that song from
was? Yeah, the Dornishman's wife.
The Dornishman's
wife.
There
was a lot of hair washing.
There was like sort of a weird parallel of hair washing.
A parallel?
Well, there was the washing of the corpse hair, and then
I
there
was
the washing
kind
of out
of
the
went right
hair dye.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not real sensitive to corpse washing.
Maybe you will be by the end of the series.
I liked how Littlefinger said, "We both peddle
fantasies." Yeah, we can hope.
How he what?
He said, "We both peddle fantasies, Brother Lancel. Mine are just entertaining."
Oh,
boom! That was awful.
Great. That was a good smackdown.
That was, but... I don't think I would have said it.
It helped.
Well, he doesn't realize to the extent to which the faith militants got everybody by the balls at the moment.
Exactly. He doesn't realize how close he came to getting fucked over right there.
Right.
Yeah.
Like
exactly.
Master
that
manipulator.
He's totally underestimating. He's
just
like, who is
barely got off.
Beggar, whatever. Mm.
Little
poor religious people.
But
Lancel almost had him, you know.
But he stood down. Lancel did allow him to.
Barely. Lancel still deferred to the queen mother.
Yeah.
But that won't last.
So the big sections, and there was a lot of people missing. I mean, there are a lot of storylines missing. You know, we didn't see Brienne at all. We didn't see it. So, but there was Arya, there was Jorah and Tyrion, there was Lord Baelish, there was the whole scene with Marcel and Jaime and Bronn and Oberlin's daughters, the Sand Snakes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
There was Cersei and the trial and Loras and Margaery. And then there was Sansa and the Boltons. I mean,
I guess we did hit them all.
Yeah. There was
it was
no
interesting. This
Daenerys
episode was really, like, it kept it in. Just a few storylines, and that's it. Depth instead of breadth.
Yeah, they're almost forced to. There's so many plot lines that mm-hmm. I think they're better off going, like, every other episode with some of the ancillary plot lines.
Well, there's no Meereen, even though there was talk of going there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And there was nothing at the Wall.
Nothing at the Wall.
Although they did talk about the former Lord Commander.
Oh, there was no Jon Snow.
Aww. You hate those episodes.
I'm sad about that. I have a crush on him. Everything about this episode was sad.
I hate this fucking show.
But Marcella has a boyfriend.
In fact, that was
true love.
And a great dress.
Puke. And a great dress. Was that
That's yeah. fantastic.
Well, you know
dress.
How they dress down in Dorne. Pretty slutty.
Mm-hmm. They're more passionate down there.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
She had a passionate dress on.
She had a passionate dress.
Blooded Dornish
for an 8-year-old girl, or how old is she
Shut up.
So I thought about ages when the slave guy said Chuck. About Jorah, like, oh, he looks like he could be 60 or something like that. I'm like, 60?
I was like, what?
I mean, 35 and like the whole scheme. This show,
yeah,
because you know everyone is either no one, eight.
No
or
one's
30.
Ever lived to 60 in their world, except for Aegon.
Maybe that's what made it such an insult. He looks like he's 120 years old.
He does look like he's 60, which would have made Lord Commander Mormont 80. He didn't look that old.
Jorah
doesn't
look
60.
No, he looks 60. Like
55.
He's got hair color for 50. Crying out loud.
He still has hair color.
More than anybody at this table-save cat can say.
Well, okay. So we're guaranteed to see some Myrnese fighter pit action next week, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And
which probably means we're going to get another glimpse of the dragons, you think? Or too soon? There's only 2-3 episodes left in the season.
I don't think the fighter pit things are going to happen very long before there's a dragon incursion.
Yeah, it's going to be.
I think opening day.
There's four more episodes.
Turn them dragons loose. Oh. See some carnage. Hate this fucking show. Burn it down! Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
That was not a cool waveform.
Clipped it.
I want a party in the next one.
You want a party?
I want there to be a party. Somebody's birthday. See, I want something happy.
Parties usually end up with dead bodies.
Why don't you guys put on your Jon Snow and Daenerys costumes next week?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And I'll put
on.
I do
have it.
I'll put on.
I do.
I don't. I could put on. I'll shave my head and put on my Varys costume.
Wait, I wasn't Jon Snow. I was Sam.
Oh, you were?
Yeah. Which really gets her hot.
Sam. Sam Tarly.
Yeah.
You
can come
Who do you want me to be?
I don't know. Who do you want to be?
Loris.
I don't want to be any of those fucking people.
You could be
fuck this show.
Stannis.
Stannis, yeah. Right.
Or Davos.
I'm famous for correcting people's grammar, so that works.
Fine, Davos.
I want to be Bronn.
Yeah. He's such an ass. He's not an asshole. He's just such a fucker.
No, he's an asshole.
Yeah,
yeah,
totally.
But like
asshole.
In the
that's
good
why
way. Like
the
he's
only
just,
character I like.
He's entertaining and
he's
and
honest.
Honest, yeah. He's funny.
One of a few.
Good in a fight.
And were you saying before the podcast that the actor who plays Bronn dated the actor who played Cersei?
Like in 2002, 2003.
So crazy.
And that they had sort of a tension on the set that escalated.
Just last season.
Yeah. The actor who played Joffrey was quoted like a year ago as saying, oh, those two can't be on the set together at the same time.
Wow.
We have to keep them separated.
Really?
Yeah.
And I can picture him just rolling his eyes, women.
Oh, but they did not like him telling the media or whoever that. They're like, come on.
Perhaps
fucking
not.
Use your head. We're going to kill you off. Well, it's about that time.
All right, we did it.
I'm so glad we had this time.
Now do Bear and the Maiden.
Come on,
Bear.
Outro.
Outro music should be going. Probably can't even hear us now.
It's done.